Morning, everybody. Thanks, Nathan. On 88.1, it is Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Wednesdays are the day here on the program when we focus on politics. In a little bit, I'll talk to John Fritzi of the Baltimore Sun and political scientist Todd Eberle about the congressional races that will be on the April 26th primary ballot. But first, I'm delighted to welcome to the broadcast John Willis. He served as the Maryland Secretary of State from 1995 to 2003 during the Glendening administration, and he's an expert on election law, electoral history, and electoral behavior. He is the executive in residence at the University of Baltimore and the author of several books on presidential politics and Maryland politics. John Willis, welcome. Good to see you.
It's good to be with you, Tom.
So I want to start by bringing up something that Nathan pointed out to me a week or two ago. I made a statement that I've probably made more than once, and I think I'm not the only one who's made it, about the registrations and the voter demographics in the city of Baltimore. I said that 9 out of 10 voters are Democrats. And Nathan, you called me on that because that's not correct, is it?
The voter registration advantage Democrats to Republicans in Baltimore City is 9-1. So for every 9 registered Democrats in Baltimore, there's 1 registered Republican. But that doesn't include the unaffiliated, the independents, the Greens, people registered to other parties.
So what do the numbers actually end up being when we lump in everybody else?
78% of city voters, registered city voters, are Democrats, 8% Republicans, 12% unaffiliated, and then there's 1% that are Greens, Libertarians, or some other party.
So we're not really talking 90% Democrats. We're really talking 78% Democrats in terms of the general election.
But of the people that are going to be able to vote for mayor in the upcoming primary, it's 9-1 because only Democrats and Republicans can vote for mayor in the
upcoming
primary.
And that's right, John. So if you're an independent or a Green Party candidate or an affiliate, you have to switch your registration in order to vote in one of these primaries on the 26th.
Correct. 21 days prior to the election. So you have till April 5th to change your registration if you want to participate in one of the two primaries that we have in Maryland.
Because if you buy the common wisdom that, for example, in the mayor's race, whoever wins the Democratic primary has an overwhelming chance to win the general election in November because of the number of Democrats registered in the city. If you want to have an influence in that race, it is possible, if you're currently an independent, for example, to switch your affiliation before April 5th and then switch it back anytime after, right? There's no limit on the number of times you go back and forth.
There is no limit, and we're not quite like New Hampshire, where you could change your registration on the way in to vote and then change it on the way out to vote back. But we don't have an open primary process. We don't have registration processes that allow that. But we have a 21-day rule in terms of party registration.
All right. Well, Nathan, I appreciate your fixing me on that, so I'll now make sure.
Well, you're technically correct for the primary.
For the primaries.
Voters.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot on this program about the history of extremely low voter participation in some recent elections. There's a number of different ways of looking at it, percentages of people who vote, et cetera. But one of the more depressing ways to look at it is that in the last Baltimore mayoral primary in 2011, in the Democratic primary, there were 217,000 registered Democrats who could have voted but didn't. They stayed home. In the general election, it was even worse. There were 323,000 people registered to vote, eligible to vote, who didn't vote in the general election. People died. People got their heads bashed in the 60s and before that for the right to vote. And it's just appalling that many people choose not to be part of the process.
Well, I wouldn't, do a lot of self-flagellation about Baltimore. Los Angeles set a record low as well during that same time frame. Other cities around the country saw a similar drop-off. I don't get as concerned about this dip, both in participation and turnout, because voters, as Mayor Schmoke once said, know when there's a real election and when there's not a real election. And so there are a lot of variables in turnout. And it's also a question of what you look at. If you just look at the last couple election cycles, yes, we've been in a low turnout period. But you go back to 2008, you go back to 1992, you go back to the 1980s, you go back to the 1960s, you'll see that turnout spiked when there was either social economic issues at play, there was heavily contested elections. The public has a sense of when it's important and when things are status quo, sense of alienation, whatever might affect voter attitude in the political environment.
Of course, this is the first time that a mayor's primary is aligned with a presidential primary in Congress and Senate and that sort of thing. So that is expected to increase the turnout for this
time. It'll be very interesting because presidential elections have in primary presidential elections, we've had volatility in those as well. We had a very high turnout in 2008, well over 40% in 2008. In 2012, with the reelection of the president, the turnout was way down, similar to the numbers that you recited about the mayoral election. I expect this one will bounce back. I'm not sure we'll reach the 2008 or the 1992 turnouts that went over 40%, but we could very well I expect we'll improve dramatically from what happened in 2011.
Do you know off the top of your head what the mayoral high water mark was in a turnout in a mayoral election?
Well,
in the last,
William Donald Schaefer versus Billy Murphy in 1983, which was a very contested election, and a lot of energy and resources went into that election throughout the city. And we've had other ones as well. I mean, the O'Malley election in 1999 in the primary, at least on the Democratic side, was a little less than 50%. So that was a very healthy turnout in the first O'Malley election in 1999.
And I guess Schaefer and Murphy in 1983 was just over 50%. So that was even more than the Obama
turnout. Oh, it was over
50%.
Yes,
2008.
It was.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
But you had, of course, a very popular mayor who was being challenged, and both sides took that race very seriously, and it was worked very hard.
Yeah. It's true, I would imagine, that presidential, or at least that's the goal of the realigning the elections now, with the presidential primary being the same day as the mayoral primary. I assume then they're assuming that the presidential primaries can drive voter turnout to the mayor's race. If you're working for the Clinton campaign or the Sanders campaign or the Trump campaign or the Cruz campaign, does the mayoral election at all influence and drive turnout to the presidential?
Well, the presidential race will be the biggest driver of the larger turnout factor, unless the lower level races, like you mentioned, a contested U.S. Senate race on both sides, an open seat. So we have open seats for president, we have open seats for U.S. Senate, we have open seats for mayor. The combination of that, I think, bodes well for an above average turnout. I'm not sure we'll reach back to the historic highs, but it is the combination of factors. The other factor wasn't just turnout, but was money. In other words, it cost money. We at the Schaefer Center at University of Baltimore help the Board of Elections train election judges. That's thousands of people that have to be paid one day to run an election. You're talking potentially millions of dollars.
Yeah, and so if you have a lot cheaper to have mayors and presidents on the same ballot,
as opposed to running
a separate election,
you're saving millions of dollars for the city of Baltimore. So the motivation was turnout was one of the factors, but money was another big factor in aligning the city election with the
Of course, as of this morning, according to the Washington Post, for example, Donald Trump has 739 delegates of the 1,237 that he needs to clinch the nomination. Senator Clinton has, Secretary Clinton has 1,681. She needs 2,382. Senator Sanders has 927. So Secretary Clinton has about twice as many as Senator Sanders. It's possible that by the 26th of April, the nominations on both sides of the aisle will be a done deal. And that would, I would imagine, then suppress turnout in Maryland?
Correct. And that's been the big variable all year. In my conversations on this issue and talking to you and other members of the media and even in coursework, that's the big variable. What is the state of the presidential race going to be on April 26th? And to what extent will that influence both the turnout on the Republican side and the Democratic side here in Maryland?
But we have never had a mayoral race like this one, though, have we?
We haven't in terms of the number of candidates. And we've had very competitive races before in the history of mayoral elections. But we've got a number of candidates that have raised over several hundred $100,000, which allows them to communicate to voters in terms of direct mail, telephone, all the traditional voter contact methods, and indeed cable advertising, broadcast advertising. So we've seen the fracturing of this race is what's most intriguing about it. And I think you started to see that yesterday in terms of candidates attempting to draw lines among themselves, between themselves.
Right. In a mayoral debate that was broadcast on one of the local cable channels for the mayors that met at the University of Baltimore. In terms of political strategy, does it advantage a leading candidate or someone trailing in the polls to have a higher or a lower voter turnout?
Well, it depends. Again, we're a city of strong neighborhoods. It depends on where the turnout is. I mean, among the council district, for example, at the city council level, there are some very competitive city council races. There are other city council races that are not competitive at all. So, turnout among the council districts can be as great as 10% difference from one council district to another.
Yeah, that's big.
And the same thing in the presidential race, in the U.S. Senate race, where are those candidates attempting to draw their voters? And that can have a distorting influence on the mayoral race.
Yeah.
And just as the mayoral candidates are going to focus on precincts and wards and precincts that they think favor them. If for someone like me, this is just a fascinating, wonderful thing to be able to study.
Fascinating for us as well. And you are the guy that knows this stuff. So I really appreciate your coming in. Thanks so much, John Willis.
Oh, it's always a pleasure.
John Willis served as the Maryland Secretary of State from 1995 to 2003. He's currently the executive in residence at the School of Public and International Affairs at the University of Baltimore. If you're not registered to vote in the April 26th primary election, or if you'd like to change your registration in order to vote in either the Democratic or Republican primaries, you have just about 2 weeks till April 5th. Early voting starts April 14th, and again, the primary is on April 26th. Coming up after a break for the news, a look at the congressional races in Maryland with John Fritzy of the Baltimore Sun and Todd Eberly of St. Mary's College. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Nathan, back to you, sir.